Yellow? Oh, sure. I am the one who started that craze back in P-Town with Tennessee Williams. It's brilliant! What you do is you take a scuba snorkel and you put your in the wee bendy mouth part. Then you sneak the other end right up your back address, okay? Then you just grab the middle of that snorkel and you in your own ass and pulling it off your crank at the self same time until you spend in your own jacksy. That's a rusty venture.
Hi. Welcome to Venture Bros, Venture Brothers Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brian Dressel. With me, as always, is Nick Batman Friedman.
Batman? I hardly knew him. I don't know. I planked.
That was pretty good.
It's my last time for superheroes, so I wanted to go as like mainstream as possible and just see what you did with it. And I feel like I caught you off guard with going too mainstream.
Because you were telling us what your plan is for the next season, and I was expecting what your plan was for the next season. I was like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, no, we're still in season 4 right now.
Yep.
That comes next week.
Oopsie.
We also have Graham, Captain America Mason.
Hello. I'm Captain America. I have a shield. And can do things faster and stronger than other persons.
Not all persons, but some of them.
So, yeah, some. Yeah.
Most.
Yeah. Depending on how strong and confident I am, I may be able to hold Thor's hammer. Who knows?
Yeah, depending on the day, apparently.
Yeah,
if I'm up to Endgame. We're here. We're at the end. I'm very sad. I'm very sad to leave season 4 behind.
Yeah.
It's very bittersweet.
It was a good long run.
It was. And it's interesting if you look into the books or you like the commentary or whatnot, for a long time this was series finale. Not season finale, series. This was the end.
My only friend.
I know. And when you watch it under that mindset, it kind of makes sense a little bit. I think it wraps everything up where if this was the end of the show, there's very little that I'd be like, what the fuck? Like, the only thing would be like, who are the boys' mom and why did Monarch hate Venture? But I don't think we're ever going to answer to that one. So
just because he hates so well.
God damn, why can't I get a straight answer?
Yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. I mean, because especially in the last, couple minutes or seconds, the montage wrap up of, Brock running into the prom and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it kind of feels pretty parentheses.
It has that feeling of how they say in the book, everything's going to be fine.
Right.
Yeah.
I could see it. But before we get too deep into any of that business, we need to do a quick little breakdown. Nick, it's your turn.
Okay. So I'm going to do broad strokes here. First and foremost, Rusty's throwing his sons a prom, a homeschool prom, for the best money that $500 can buy.
Yeah.
Basically, he's getting everybody to chip in as much as possible. Some of it includes Brock being their limo driver, Dr. Orpheus doing hors d'oeuvres? Is that what he was in charge of? I don't remember. Pete is the DJ. That's pretty much all that matters. Yeah. Refreshments. That's what it is. And basically, everybody, all the adults are just getting hammered, and the kids are just kind of figuring things out. Dean invites Triana as his date, thinking that that's going to be his chance to kind of like woo her, and it turns out she has a boyfriend that he did not expect and does not like, obviously. And then pretty much Hank and Dermot, who gets invited as Hank's date, try and set Dean up with Triana. And it goes.
Does it?
Kind of.
It goes and as then well as it time, could,
Exactly. And then this whole time, Colonel Gathers and the rest of Sphinx are trying to orchestrate some sort of trade for, I don't know, like clemency? Is that there, or forgiveness?
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to get forgiveness for betraying OSI in return for handing over Monstroso.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Molotov Cocktease comes in and you find out that she's romantically involved with Monstroso, and that comes to a head.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Broad strokes.
Broad strokes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's enough where we can talk about it.
You didn't talk about what? Jacket, you know, but that's okay.
That's okay.
You know, we have an entire part of an episode dedicated next week to Jacket. We'll discuss Jacket then. But, you know, the thing about this one is, do we recommend it? Like, is not do we recommend it. Do we like it? Is this a good finale? What do you guys think? How does this one sit with you?
Yeah, it's pretty action-packed. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I would say so.
This is not my favorite finale of the show by any stretch, but I think it's their best written. It might be their best one, even if it's not my favorite. And the reason I say that is, and it's partly, it could be because I'm a little biased now that I read their whole thing in the book about it, where usually in the book they talk about like what you missed in the episode or like what you didn't understand. And this one was just a very emotional, like, this was so tough for us to write. We had to prove that we could do an hour-long episode and that we could be emotional and funny and do action all at the same time and just really kind of cash in on all the goodwill that we've been earning. And we think we did it. And the more I read about that, the more I'm like, I think they did it too. This episode's great. And when you think about all the moving parts and all the things that are in this 1 hour-long episode, I think they did a great job. I really, really like this one.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
You talk about how we've, in other episodes, they've jumped around between A and B stories and, you know, A, B, and C, D, and, you know, I think they've gotten up to G, you know, stories before.
Yeah.
And before we felt like I was just like too disassembled, too disoriented and disjointed and, you know, just all the other D words and kind of all over the place. But this one, I think it's got three separate pieces and I'm, you know, you're following all of them. They all feel interconnected and they all feel very timely and come to a head pretty much at exactly the same point.
And none of them feel shortchanged, which happens a lot in these like kind of like big grab bag episodes where it's like, oh, I kind of wish we got more from that story. I never got that from a single storyline.
Exactly.
No.
The one thing I will say that really, at least in my opinion, I wish it was like either an Easter egg on the DVD or like a special feature on the DVD. I wish we could watch this with the ads they had running mid episode, like they did when it aired. I'm not sure if you guys remember that or if you watched it when it aired. But when it did, Public and Hammer, they had like their weird looking tuxes on and they're sitting like drinking like weird looking drinks and they had just very odd things to say about the show that were intercutted at every commercial break and they were just hysterical. And I kind of miss having those little like jabs in there throughout the show.
Interesting. I did not watch it live, so I did not know that existed.
You can see all of them on the DVD. Like, they just run back to back to back to back. Yeah. But it was always like, the first time I saw it with that in there, I'm like, oh, that was awesome. And then I never really saw it again.
Yeah. I think weird. I did see it live, but it, you know, was a couple years ago.
It was a few years back.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like I said, I just wish it was like one of those like Easter eggs on the DVD. Like if you punched left when you hit play, you got to watch that version of it. Like something like that would have been really cool.
Yeah. No, that'd be
cool. But yeah, I think overall we're all on the same page. This is a very, very solid episode, but with a ton to dive into. So let's get started on diving into it. I think for me personally, the place I want to start with this one, and I think is the best place to start because he's the one who kind of ends the episode.
It's talking about Rusty Venture.
Is talking about Dean. Dean really, like, throughout the entirety of season 4, I feel like he never really kind of landed in a spot. He was always kind of in this, like, what am I phase. And
yes.
I don't think he fully commits to the who the fuck am I until the end of this episode. And then season 5 is him just trying to figure out who the hell he is. But that really starts in this episode.
Yeah, I think so. But I also think this is him at his lowest point, right?
I don't know. Season 7, he gets pretty low. But up to
this point, for sure, yes.
Yeah.
Not, like, into looking into the future, but just as far as, like, him at his lowest would be maybe New York. But even New York, I don't think, is lower than this.
Even New York. But in New York, he had a positive outlook. He's working in super science like he wants to. He didn't realize that he was doing a shitty job until it was, I'm burning down Impossible Industries.
I don't think he did a shitty job. I think
no. I mean, like, he was working a shitty job. Like, he's
right.
not
oh,
doing
I see
something
what you're
he
saying.
Wanted
yeah.
to be at. Yeah. He did the best he could at his shit job. But
yeah.
I think this is when he realized. It's like that moment of clarity of, like, oh, I'm depressed.
Right. But I also think that I would guess that he's been doing all of this thinking, like, oh, well, Tatiana is kind of like his fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Or sorry, not Tatiana, Triana.
Yeah,
I knew what you meant, yeah.
Yeah. The Triana is kind of like his, oh, if I do this, that, or the other, maybe Triana will kind of, like, look my way. And I think that this is his realization that, I mean, I actually don't know if he realized this or not, but, like, he just didn't ever go for it. He didn't really ever put himself out there.
Yeah. No, because he doesn't really know how. So I think asking her to the dance was the most forward he had ever been.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then to see it immediately, before they even get to the dance, have it go poorly was just like, oof.
With a Crypster.
Who was apparently, Public and Hammer didn't even remember his name in the book. They said, yeah, we modeled him after that Twilight kid.
Makes awesome. Sense.
Who's now Batman, so go figure.
Oh, boy.
Whatever, I'm into it. I think he's going to be good.
Yeah, it's also kind of sad because it's like he gave up on her, right, after she moved away and what have you. He's like, oh, okay, you know, and then he kind of dealt with it, right? But we'd never kind of heard about her, heard his thoughts on her for a long time. And now we're kind of coming back to, it's like, oh, no, he never let go. And it's kind of even sadder because you're like, oh, well, you know, whether he actually thought it or not, but the, well, she'll wait for me type of thing. And now coming to a head of like, oh, I'm not even worth considering. Damn it.
Yeah, it's like he finally fully realizes that it's not just a friend zone thing, because I kind of hate that phrase, but it's like you were never a romantic interest for her.
Yeah.
Right.
Never.
You were just neighbors.
No. And a big part of it is because he never put himself out there. Like, he just was, like, infatuated from afar, but never really... He never treated her like a human being in that sense, where it was like, oh, we can be together or anything like that. He kind of treated her as a goal, which is why I was trying to avoid saying that earlier, but that's kind of what he looked at her as. Which
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
No, I think that it's just kind of when you don't really know what you are, what you want, especially when you're young, I think that you tend to view crushes in general as kind of like these goals. You're like, oh, this could be something. Oh, this could be this or that. But you're not thinking about them as like a person, which is why she gets so upset with him, because she realizes what's going on more than he does.
Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah.
To him, she's a milestone of like, oh, great. Exactly. Then I'll get that checked off and then move on to the next thing. Totally.
And I don't understand why Triana thought this, but for some reason, I think she thought, if I give him the clean break and I just go away for a little while, he'll realize we're just friends. And it's like, that's not Dean.
No. I think so, but I also think that she definitely... I mean, it's that naive thought that you have when you're younger where it's like, oh, well, I'm not interested. I've made it clear that I'm not interested, but we've never overtly said anything, but I've made it clear. And you're like, the other person gets it. And you're like, nope. The other person does not get it. The other person is still just pining as hard as they can.
Yeah. Well, because she even tried to make Dean think it was his idea of like when they were finally separating. He was like, you know, I can't just hold out for you. And she's like, you know what? I think that's a good idea. Because she had just at that point had the experience with the master.
Exactly.
And so it was like no-go, and still is an absolute no-go on her list. Like, she's not going to be won over by him at all. And he just hasn't had that experience. So she kind of tried. She thought it was an easy, clean break with, you know, having Dean come up with the idea of not holding out for her, but she could have made it a little bit clearer. Not to say it's her fault, but I'm just saying.
No, I see what you mean, but at the same time, like, it's exactly what you just said. Like, this wasn't on her. This was Dean not letting go.
Exactly.
Yes.
Like, when everything was in his face, everyone was telling him, it's just like, dude, this just isn't working, man. But I do like, I think he's got the best, not necessarily the best line. It's not my favorite quote of the episode. Well, he does have it, but not this one. But the end of it is just so good, where it's just like, he's just getting more and more advice from more and more people. And then he's like, you know what? Fuck off, or fuck you. Like, it's just done.
You know what I think? Oh, it's fucking great. I love it.
It's so good. And it's just so out of character for him. And like, it's just the best like kickoff of, oh, he's growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
It took a while to get there, but he's doing it now.
Yeah. And I think it's also funny, too, because Hank tries to reinvent himself in this episode, too. He's like, yeah, new Hank cusses. And in the version that I watch, it's bleeped out, so you don't really hear what he says. But in this, for Dean, it's not bleeped, and it's quite clear on what his thoughts are. And you're like, oh, shit. No, new Dean cusses. That's his fucking thing. That's really him coming into his own. Whereas new Hank, you're like, yeah, you're still figuring it out. That's all right.
But that's the thing, is new Dean is legitimately Dean growing up. New Hank is just Hank.
Yeah.
Right.
That's just Hank being Hank.
Well, it's interesting. I think that this whole season, Dean has been basically on a downward path. While I think you could argue that Hank, despite some hiccups, has mostly been on an upward path.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that continues more into season 5 as well, but we'll get into that later.
Right.
But yeah, let's talk a little Hank. He's one of the only characters who doesn't really have a ton to do in this episode, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
I mean, other than Jacket and his new rock and roll career. Yeah, other than that, you know.
Yeah, that's really all he has in this, but I think that's kind of fine. I do love who he tries to take to prom. That's one of my favorite moments in the entire episode.
Yep.
So as everything about it, just him showing up at our doorstep, trying to meet her kids, all of it, it's just so wonderfully Hank.
Yep. As we've talked, none of our wives like watching this show, but definitely at that moment, perfectly timed, my wife walks through and chooses to watch the TV. She's like, this is just awkward. This is, oh man.
To be fair, Chewy loves this show. She was fully on board. She is not one of the wives who's not into this. She loves it. She actually wants to be on this show at some point. And I'm all like, right, yes.
All right. Fair enough.
We will make it work. At some point. It's tough when one of us has to watch a kid.
Yes.
But no, that's her favorite moment of the entire thing. As soon as he gets out of the cat or the limo, she's like, is this when he hits on the mail lady? Like, yep.
Yes, it is.
He tries his damnedest.
He swings for the fences. Like, who boy?
Isn't it time that your sons meet their new beau?
Oh, it's so good. All right, moving on to what? What do you guys want to talk about next? Which one? There's so many people to talk about.
I mean, I feel like we should probably talk about, like, the party in general. I guess Rusty, because Rusty's the one putting on the party.
Yeah, because I was going to say either Rusty. My next move was either Rusty or 21, but I didn't want to just steer everything. So let's go with Rusty first, because Rusty and the party are kind of hand in hand. And the thing that I love about it is that we had that wonderful moment with Hank at the end of, I don't remember what episode it was, where he talks about his birthday party and how his dad brought, like, Playboy bunnies and all these women that are just way out of his league and just embarrass the hell out of him. And it's like, oh, Rusty realizes what it is to be a bad father, and then hires a whole bunch of prostitutes to come to his son's prom.
Yep.
Yeah, but this is different. Surely it's different. Right? It's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Different?
Hello, well, it's guys? Different in the way of, Jonas got the most attractive women he could get to show up to a party, which were the most attractive women of the day.
Yeah.
And then Rusty did the same thing, which were the budget hookers.
Right. And then paid for half service. Well, and then just a kiss on the mouth, on the cheek. Okay, four of that.
And then, you know, Billy had to get his hot girl on.
Yep.
But did that actually happen? I spent the rest of the episode watching it, and I didn't see anybody in a hot girl outfit.
No.
Did I miss it?
No, it didn't happen. No. I was a little disappointed. But, I mean...
And then
are you surprised? What prostitution company has a hawk girl outfit? Do either one of you even know who Hawk Girl is?
No.
Well,
but...
considering the budget,
yeah,
the budget is only $500 total, and drinks and everything else probably cost what, $100? So $400 to spend between everything else.
Well, he did offer to pay for the Hawk Girl.
That's yes,
true. Out of his $6 million, $10 million.
I don't know. He doesn't like throwing around the word millionaires.
That's true. But if you want to, you know, he's fine with it. I do also so we were talking about how Jonas, right, hired, what was it, the Dallas Cowboys and a porn star who ended up being anti-porn at that time and sent one of her friends. And how terribly that worked out. And so how Rusty tried to hire prostitutes, and even for, you know, just a kiss on the cheek, all of this other stuff, and then accidentally it was wound out, he hired the Deadly Hearts assassins, and that could have gone terribly worse.
I think he just hired prostitutes.
He hired prostitutes, but I mean the way that worked out still.
Did it?
What do you mean?
Oh, yeah, what are we talking about? No, it didn't. She was lying. He didn't hire anybody.
No, they were.
No, they weren't. No, they weren't.
They turned into...
There's a huge problem with this.
No. Nick is absolutely right. I was just thinking about, like, the reveal. When they get there, no, they weren't Deadly Hearts. That was Molotov Cocktees bluffing.
Yes.
I don't know. I think they could have been.
And I can prove
it. And they were won over by the Spanish Fly.
No.
No way.
Nope.
No way.
Here's the problem. When Brock takes the girl, one of the prostitutes, into the other room, into the Sphinx base, when Molotov Cocktees knocks him out, she threatens the girl.
Fair enough.
Why would she then threaten one of her own people and not give her, like, a high five?
Maybe that was Hawk Girl. They couldn't find a Hawk Girl off of they had to find a Hawk Girl off the street.
I appreciate the reaching there, Graham, but I think Nick's right on the money on this one.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, fair enough.
Because I did the same thing. Like, I'm watching it going, like, oh, I forgot they were all, like, double age. Oh, wait, they're not. And I think that was the whole, like, we going way back to the beginning of the episode where Public and Hammer were talking about how everything's going to be fine. I think that was that moment of, like, Brock running in to save the day because there's more problems. And then he gets there and, like, oh, wait, no, there are no more problems. This is done.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Rusty's crazy fucking gargantuan fly concoction basically kills all the women. And then instead of, you know, trying to turn them back, Brock just murders them all.
Which is what he does best.
I'm not disagreeing with that. It's just a little sad for all those poor prostitutes.
Well, I mean, the way they probably would have saved them was probably just to keep them as weird Spanish fly monster women. Like, well, they're alive.
I mean, I can't say you're wrong.
This seems right.
Yeah. Yeah, that tracks.
Maybe pull their wings off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that also seems like a Rusty solution.
It was a Rusty solution to the original Spanish Fly.
Oh, no, he's really pissed off. Especially because I pulled his wings off. Rusty, why? He's already in a cage that's... just barely bigger than he is. He's not going anywhere.
Oh my god, Rusty's the worst.
The worst.
Except for, you know, of course, Pete White.
Oh my god.
Who? I mean, he Rusty doesn't really have in this episode momentarily eclipses Pete White as the worst, and then it goes back to just being Pete White, crown holder, as the worst.
I do love in the book, they talk about how they all have their prom outfits, and, like, their outfits are actually pretty interesting. Like, Rusty's in like the same prom outfit that he wore to his prom. The Monarch is wearing the tux. It's the exact same costume design of the tux that Rusty wore to his wedding.
Oh, wow.
It's only the tux that he has.
That's right.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And then they get to Pete White, and they're like, and he's just some horrible 80s thing.
Very true.
Yep, that works.
Yep, that tracks.
I do love that, like, they put him in charge of a DJ, and it's like, what do you need? And he's like, I have everything I need right here in his iPhone. And then he still has all these lights and other things. It's like, Pete, you... I hate you.
Yep. I also, there's something weird where it's like, is Pete White a good DJ? I'm going to throw this out there. No.
I mean, he might have been in college, but he hasn't changed.
He just never got
one
better.
Iota. Yeah.
Yeah, he just keeps playing the same shit. And poor Billy, they plan a dance together and he doesn't want to do the dance with them. Just dance with Billy. The guy gets so many few victories. He wants to do a dance with Pete? Just dance with him, you chump.
Yeah, he lost his girl.
Wow. God, I hate Pete.
He's the worst.
Especially when there's a fight. A fight breaks out, and he's like, oh, great! And then he turns all the lights on, stops the music, and points to him. Like, oh, buddy. You're still in college, aren't you, bud?
Yeah. He'll never be out of college. He doesn't do anything even remotely, like, good until season 7. And even the one time he tries to do something good, he still fucks something up. We'll get to that in a few months.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he did have that moment, you know, some time ago earlier this season when he actually hired Sphinx to help. But that's all that he can do is trade a transaction and have somebody else do something.
True. Let's talk 21.
Oh, man.
Or I guess we should just call him Gary right now, or Viceroy, because this is when he takes a little break. A little goodbye from being a henchman for a little while. It's a little sad. But I do like that they do not keep him as a good guy from here on out. But I do love... I love his journey in this episode. Like, his journey throughout the entirety of the show is fantastic. And the entirety of season 4 is even better than the whole of the show. But this episode of just, like, the self-realization and everything he goes through... Like, he has very few funny moments in this episode. Like, very few. Like, his is all pretty emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. And real. And it works. I mean, when he's having that moment at prom with Dr. Orpheus... He's like, oh, I'm talking to the dead. Like, can you see him? And then that whole sequence of, like, when we have the wide shot of them at the prom, and he just realizes that it's all in his head.
Yeah.
That's a real moment.
Oh, yeah. And, like, this answers that question you brought up a long time ago, Graham, of, like, who marked off the checklist.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just the Muppets.
It's the Muppets. Yep.
I don't know why they're doing it, but that answers who's doing it.
Yeah.
That's so confusing, considering what the way that this whole thing plays out. It's so weird to me.
For what I guessed it was, because they don't really say it, like, the book doesn't say anything really tangible about the episode. It's just how they felt writing it. And I didn't watch the commentary because I only had time to watch it once. But my bet is that the Muppets saw him talking to himself or talking to the skull and are fucking with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because they kind of hate him. Not as much they hate a 24, but they do not like 21.
Right, but I think that they're at least a little scared of 21.
Yeah, so they wouldn't
especially now.
Yeah, so they wouldn't do it to his face, but they'd still continue to fuck with him.
Right, yeah. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
But yeah. I do like that moment of, like, when the Monarch walks in, and you're like, what the fuck is this? Christmas list? What?
Yeah.
You're on this list. Here, and then he puts his own name down. Which I think he was already on there. But anyways.
Yeah, I don't remember. I didn't look at the list. But anyways, yeah. So I love that the moment in the beginning when he's trying to bury the head, and the whole thing between Shore Leave and Hatred as they're trying to take shots at him is fucking fantastic. Shore Leave is the best.
Double up, bump, bump.
But I love the way Shore Leave takes no shit from anyone. And the whole, like, yeah, are you coming with? We have intruders on the compound. He's like, you want me to come with? Well, yeah, I'm short-manned.
Yeah.
And just that moment of acceptance that he's never fully gotten from the Monarch, even though the Monarch definitely, like, cares for him, and he is his number one henchman, and, like, he will say all that wonderful stuff behind his back, but never really to his face, the second he got any sort of, like, acceptance from anyone, you could just see, like, the shock on his face of, surely wants him to hang out with him. When Hank sees him, he's like, oh, hey, Gary, are you coming to my prom? Do you want me there? Yeah. Like, he's not used to being wanted. And it's that kind of like, oh, have I been doing the wrong thing this whole time? Should I not be a henchman?
Yeah.
And I love seeing all that realization. Like, the animation is so good. The voice acting is so good. All of it works so well when you get all of that without saying really any of it.
Yeah.
And show don't tell in animation is difficult. And I think they did a great job with it.
Yeah, because you really see his, I don't want to say inner turmoil, but his questioning in that moment. Like, the way he gets almost immediately accepted by, quote, the good side or the good guys. He's like,
yeah.
Oh. And then he just goes with it. And then until he has his final break with Monarch and Dr. Mrs. the Monarch. And this is when they discuss, of like, what the hell? We kissed on top of you. What the hell? It's like, we're evil. We're villains. We swing. Like, what the? It's not a thing.
Yeah, like, we don't give a fuck. Like, you're our henchman. We don't care. Why are you in you're in love with me? Who cares? We made out once. Not even really made out. We kissed. Like, it was not a big deal to her at all. And I think that just kind of even cements it even further. Like, fuck off. Like, yeah. I'm just done. Like, I can't keep dealing with you two. Like, it's just not working for me anymore. And, like, that's what starts his whole journey for next season. At least for a few episodes.
Right.
Exactly.
What have we missed? We've been talking for a while here, and we still have to do our wrap-up of the season. We haven't mentioned this is the first time we see Hatred with a V on his face. This is where we get the whole thing. He got the rest of them removed, except for the D, because it's a little tender down there.
What are you, Sergeant Vatred now?
I love that. We finally hear what happened to Kim, the fan favorite of, like, ooh, when's she going to come back? She's not.
Nope. Very quickly on Sergeant Hatred. I feel like this episode really cemented how I feel about Sergeant Hatred as a bodyguard.
Okay.
He can't hit the broadside of a barn, like, standing right next to it.
With a scope.
Like, it really made me question him as a bodyguard. Like, it was just like, in a show like this, which is, like, so remarkably violent, I feel like you at least have to do something really well. And I just don't think that he has a skill like that.
No, his skill is his can-do attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
For better or worse, that's the thing he's best at.
Yeah. And, like, oddly enough, like, motivation and, like, getting people
that's
together.
That's true.
Yeah, he's a good motivator.
Yeah.
He's a terrible tactician, though.
Just terrible. The worst.
Ugh.
So I feel like the last thing we do have to talk about before we move into the end of the season stuff here, we got to talk about Brock and Molotov. The end of an era.
Yeah.
It's very, very sad.
Another moment, right? Another heavy moment of, like, when she throws her...
what is it even called? It's not a chastity belt, right?
It is.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
She throws her chastity belt on the hood. It's like, this is real. You're like, oh my god, this is happening. And then you can totally see where Brock's going, but you know it's still Molotov cocktails. And you're like, damn, it's something. And it's like, no. Ah, come on!
But I do love that they, I mean, this felt very final, and it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Brock was never going to, like, they were never going to end up together, ever.
No.
That was not their journey. They were at arms the whole time. Like, if he had an arch nemesis, it would have been her.
For sure.
And yeah. I like the way it pays off. Like, personally, I really enjoy it. Like, she threw everything on the line for a different guy, and he had to deal with it.
Yep.
And he's even sitting there going, like, I'm done with this fight. I'm tired of doing this. Is this going to work or not? Because if not, I'm just going to get off the hood of this car and you're going to go away.
See, I can't keep doing this. I don't even know if she's throwing it on. I feel like she's just lying to Brock again. I mean, like, the only thing that we really know about her as a character is that she always comes first in her mind.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it's just like, yeah, she got hired to do this, and this is how she's going to try and manipulate Brock again, because it's a tried and true method. Lord knows he falls for it pretty much every time. And you're right, like, she's his nemesis, like, very clearly. Like, she knows exactly what buttons to push for him. She knows exactly kind of, like, what to do to kind of get him to do whatever she wants. And in a weird way, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if she's lying the whole time there, too.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense. It just doesn't... For me, that one just feels so final, and especially knowing, like, the behind-the-curtain stuff of this was supposed to be the finale...
Right.
I buy it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, I do kind of buy their love, to put some heavy air quotes on it. Because, like she says, like, I'm evil, he's evil and all-powerful and all this stuff, and we just fit, and we just work. Like, yeah, I guess so. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean,
that's
it
a couple.
Works.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the one thing we didn't really talk about, and I'm not sure how much I'd even really have to say about it, because I know a lot of fans love this guy. He's never been my favorite. The whole Tracer stuff.
Mm.
I enjoy Tracer, but, like, as a distance, like, yeah. I just don't really need him ever. So when he shows up, it's like, oh, it's kind of entertaining. I like him better as the Hulk later on. I also like the hints here that he becomes a Hulk.
I love his reveal. Just right before a commercial break of just, I'm a Hulk. So good.
And I also love the end of the show with him getting rocketed into space with a post-it note that says, fix it.
Yeah. Like, that's Tracer.
Yeah. Like, that's all great. But for me, it's just like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, just the whole storyline. It felt necessary to tie up the Sphinx stuff and get them back into OSI.
Right.
And it worked, and I didn't feel like I was shortchanged or like it's overstayed its welcome or anything like that. But it's nothing in the show that really particularly like grabbed me, like anything else we've talked about did.
That's true.
Yeah.
I do like seeing Sky Pilot get a little bit more of a spotlight for a little while.
Yeah.
He's very bitter that he hasn't gotten the spotlight, which I find funny. But it's just, if something had to go in this episode and they got rid of that, I don't think this episode would be that much lesser for it.
Yeah. He's got a pretty good line in this, you know. Circle. Yep. I can maybe octagon.
And he crashes. Which is like, that's so stupid.
And look, his reasoning for crashing is great. You even know how much fuel that thing takes?
I love like how much that they like openly hate Sphinx. Like it's just like a means to an end to them, but they just like hate everything about it. Like not a single person misses Sphinx, I feel like. One person misses Sphinx.
Surely.
But like
Surely would definitely miss Sphinx.
Yeah.
But otherwise, no, you're totally right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like they hate how cheap it is.
Yeah, which makes sense because it is just all show for nothing.
Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to ask was
it's just the burning question throughout this whole episode. What is a Rusty Venture?
Oh my god. Okay.
I trust Brock.
I trust Brock more than everybody else.
True. So then with that point,
all of them are horrifying. All of them are horrifying.
A double frog man. So was Brock trying, was he going for a Rusty Venture a few episodes ago when they were telling their secret telling?
Oh, you're right.
Like jerking off 12 times in a day just to see if he could. Was he going for a Rusty Venture?
Yes.
Yep.
All right.
Here's something else that's disgusting, but it's another notch in the all of Team Venture, like original Team Venture, horrific human beings. Colonel Gentleman, who watched Rusty grow up, is the one that created the Rusty Venture.
Oh, that's so fucked up. So yes. Fucked up.
I was like watching it going like, oh my god.
Yeah. Could you imagine naming a sex act that you're trying out for the first time after your best friend's son.
Oh, it's so gross.
That's
so gross.
Disgusting.
I'm so glad you remembered that, because if we hadn't brought that up, I'd be a little disappointed.
Right?
Ugh.
But I do.
They're all
I
terrible people.
Yeah, they're all terrible people. Well, I mean, I don't know. Shore Leave and...
No, I'm talking about original venture. Every single one of them horrific.
No. The Bible guy, he's fine.
I'm sure we just haven't gotten there yet. I'm so convinced.
Yeah, he's got some lingering stuff.
You could be right, but I'm gonna assume he's a good guy. Just so there was one of them, there had to be a moral compass somewhere.
No, you know what it is that he's like the woman in the neutral place in the good place. Like he's now doing this, but he was absolutely horrific at some point.
I could see that.
Fair.
All right, let's move into favorite quotes of the episode, and then we'll move into the finale stuff of season 4, and then we'll say goodbye. I have to go with my favorite quote first. I hope you don't mind. Mine comes from Dean, and it's when Dean is just melting down at Triana about what's his name? Raven.
Yep.
And he just screams at her. It just kills me. Just the maybe Raven can come pick you up in his diaper. His poo diapers. Oh, Dean. Nice try, buddy.
He's so heartbroken and so mad, but he just can't use words correctly.
Not the most articulate chap. Nick, what about you?
Oh, mine's like right at the beginning, just because I was like, every so often Rusty does something like just worse than you would think, but also like right in line. And for some reason, what bothers me more than hiring hookers for his son's prom is the fact that he's only willing to spend $500 on the prom.
Totally.
He's like, the best prom $500 can buy. I was like, I shouldn't be upset, but I am upset. I'm very upset.
That's very Rusty.
Yep.
Very Rusty.
And Graham, what about you?
So mine's when Shore Leave is talking to Brock about 21. I'm like, he's talking to Brock. He's like, oh, he's cool. Sergeant shot him in the bread basket, and he still fought like a chubby little tiger for Team Sphinx.
Oh, I love Shore Leave.
Just all his phrases. So good.
They're so good. He's chubby, so good.
Chubby little tiger.
I would never want to hang out with him because I'm afraid of what he'd say about me, but I love him.
Yep.
All right, let's move into the season 4 finale stuff. So for the finale of this one, we're doing top 5 favorite episodes, and we're going to do best quote of the season. And I'm going to start with best quote of the season, and mine was also my favorite quote of the episode it was in. And it is a little bit of a two-parter, so I have to read the whole thing together. And it starts with Redmantle. Teenagers are cruel, and they'll undoubtedly taunt us because our trousers are not in style anymore. And we're two heads on one body, and that has never, ever been hip. Forever one of my favorite lines ever written in the show.
That's pretty awesome. We've been talking about, like, pretty much throughout the whole season of, like, best, like, team-ups and, you know, combos of people pretty much for the whole show. And mine is with Hunter Gathers, Brock Sampson, and Shore Leave, of just this little, like, quip back and forth. Like, damn it, Shore Leave, you've ruined another outfit. Think Betsy Ross works here? I'm the one who has to sew these back together, you clown. What are you laughing at, Mr. Bloodstains on Everything? Brock goes, you know that he rips those off himself. He just, like, tears them off like a Chippendales fireman every time. Good God, why? For one, because it looks super cool. You're an infant. It's just awesome.
Nick, what about you?
Oof. I forgot that we were doing this. I don't have something. Hold on.
I'll edit
it in later.
Okay. 21 and 24, they have the, do we have souls? Yeah, well, not quite souls in a general soul, but crap. So I guess I'd become vegetarian? No, like everything has a soul. Even spinach, you can't win.
My backup, if I could have a line that wasn't a line, was just Colonel Gathers throwing the phone at the guy.
It was so good.
with the wind up and everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if that could be a line, that would have been mine, but I had to go with the red mantle. Okay, then top five favorite episodes. Graham, do you want to take it away?
Oh, man.
Go 5-1.
This is tough.
I know.
This was really tough. So I pulled off like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But I'll make it work. So 5-1.
Yep.
Operation Prom.
Okay.
Blood of the Father. Revenge Society. Everybody Comes to Hanks. And Silent Partners.
Okay. That's a... I think we have some overlap, but not in that order at all. But we're pretty close.
The other two for contention of like of in the top five were Every Way, Every Which Way But Zeus and Pinstripes and Poltergeist.
Okay. I could see why they didn't make quite the top five, but they're both solid episodes.
Yeah.
So mine goes Silent Partners, Return to Malice. And that one isn't my favorite episode, but it has such wonderful lines, it stayed in there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, as a story, not that great, but there's so many points in it that just make me laugh out loud that I had to keep it in there.
Yeah.
Operation Prom, Revenge Society, and the number one is Everybody Comes to Hanks. And I was going to put that at number two, but I want to leave it at number one just to annoy Nick because of the whole hat thing.
That's fair.
All right, Nick, top five.
I would say my top five. Five is hard, but I would probably say the Silent Partners.
Okay.
Just because it's like I'm obsessed with the investors in general. So I like that whole arc, though it doesn't really kick off until later, I would say. Then I would say The Better Man, Return to Malice, Operation Prom, and Handsome Ransom would be my number one.
Wow.
Handsome Ransom. I mean, that's a great episode. Don't get me wrong, but didn't even make my top five. But
I just love, it's like one of the only episodes this season where I really love Sergeant Hatred. Shrunk down to a little dollar bill man.
Sure. Yep.
Sweating in the little like box like underneath the street, like
eating pistachios.
Yeah. Everything about him that episode, I think back on it, I'm like, this is so stupid and wonderful. And it also, I found the quote that I was like trying to remember, which is in that episode where the monarch basically like comes back in and he's all sunburnt and basically Captain Sunshine throws him in the jail and he's just like, apparently he's never heard of due process, but just like the whole thing of him just like walking out immediately afterwards is, I love that. Everybody's really great in that episode. I think I just like that.
Yeah, that works.
It's a great episode. It's a great one-off. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's the end of season four. We've done it. We got through the longest season.
We did.
We're on to season five, which is the shortest season. So it's a bit of a change of gears, but that's okay. So let's do a quick round of plugs, and then we'll say goodbye. So we'll plug our own show first. Next week, we have coming out, there were two specials that came out between seasons four and five. Technically, if you listen to Public and Hammer, The Very Venture Halloween takes place during season five, but since it was released before it, we're going to cover it before season five, just like it came out. So next week's going to be a double episode of The Ladle to the Grave, with that 13-minute little special that came out that is funny and has one very important story beat in it. And then we're going to do The Very Venture Halloween. And then after that, we'll start season five proper. And we'll have Graham on for two episodes, and then Graham's going to say goodbye for a little while and go become a daddy.
Yep.
Yep.
Just
for a little bit. You'll be back.
Yeah.
At some point. And we're going to have the wonderful Matt Dykes filling in for you for most of the time. There's two weekends he can't record, so we will have somebody else for those weeks. But he will be our go-to replacement while Graham takes his leave. Other plugs, be sure to listen after the hype. We are fully in swing in our new format. So far, it's been a blast. I hope everyone's been enjoying it. Listen to Demon Days, listen to Samwise, read our articles on ATH, which are back in full swing. And that's everything I have to plug. Nick, Graham, anything to plug?
No.
Perfect. So, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.